the biggest stories from the pages of the London Free Press and lfpress.com. This is the London Free Press Podcast with your host, Rachel Gilbert.
Welcome to the London Free Press Podcast. I'm your host, Rachel Gilbert. Ontarians will go to the polls on February 27th, an early election called by PC Premier Doug Ford, with more than a year left in his mandate. Today, I'm talking with London Free Press reporter Norman DeBono about the candidates, the issues, including U.S. President Donald Trump's tariffs, and the potential outcome. Hey, Norm, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you, Rachel. How are you?
I'm good, good. We have a lot to... Well, we're always very happy to have you here and your expertise on these stories. We have a lot to cover in this podcast about the election. So we're going to kind of just do a general broad overview. First of all, Doug Ford called an early election. What is his game plan with that, do you think? So far, the PCs are leading in the polls. So what's the purpose of this early election?
So, I mean, he has about 16 months left in his mandate when he called the election. And there's been a lot of speculation as to why. I think that he was sensing that there could have been an economic downturn later this year, or at least a cooling of the economy. I think their polling suggested that they were very strong, they were riding high. So there was a lot of speculation leading up that they were going to call an election anyway. But when Trump was elected and then announced the tariff situation and signaled that a trade war was going to be looming through 2025 between Canada and the U.S., and of course, Ontario is a huge trading partner with the U.S., that was all he needed. That was the excuse he needed to basically rationalize or justify calling an early election. Far too early. I mean, he called it early in February. We're going to the polls February 27th. Everyone hates a winter campaign. Like, this is in the teeth of a tough Ontario winter. So that's where we find ourselves today. And he's used the tariff situation with the U.S. and the election of Trump as a rationalization for a mandate. But he had a mandate. He had a strong mandate already. So it was just a bit of political opportunism there, which is, I think that's what that's about.
Maybe to get a larger majority or something. We'll see. Okay, so we're going to talk about some of the main issues in the election. Let's start with the trade and tariffs. Doug Ford has had a lot to say. He's gone down to Washington to speak with officials there about trade and tariffs. But is the premier even really in the mix for all these discussions? Like, he's really trying to fight for us against Donald Trump and these tariffs. But is the premier in the mix in that conversation, according to the Americans, at all?
Not at all. And I think that, I don't blame him for doing this. I think, all the premiers sort of and many other national leaders were in Ottawa lobbying officials, governors, and other leaders on their behalf. I don't blame them for doing that. I think they have to do it. They have to appear to be doing nothing. If they just appeared to basically not act on it, it would be worse than doing something. Do they have a real voice? Do they have real authority? They certainly do not. I did an interview with David Peterson basically on what this election pretends, and he talked about how, he said openly the premier, as much as they like to think they have influence, they do not. He called it a pipsqueak premier in terms of the relationship to the U.S. But we're seeing this in municipal leaders as well. Josh Morgan has taken a profile on trade and tariffs, mayor of London. He has a conference of big city mayors. They've taken on a position. I think of influence. I think they have to appear to be doing something. I think their constituents demand it or are expecting it. So I understand where it's coming from, but I don't think any real change is going to be coming about as a result of Doug Ford going to Washington.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's talk about some of the main other issues during this election. We know that here in Ontario, here in southwestern Ontario, we talk a lot about housing, a lot about cost of living, just general affordability. What are each of the parties detailing? Healthcare, a lot of them have talked about detailing as some of their main issues.
I think that as the election is sort of, and we're still pretty much in the early stages of it, we're only a few weeks into this. I think that the NDP has taken the higher profile, but this is true of the Liberals as well. I think they're really trying to hammer on a couple of key points. They're really stressing the scandals that have plagued the Conservative government, the questionable land deals, investigation, and there's some speculation he called the early election because the RCMP investigation findings may be released later this year and will be very damning to the Tories. But the building of the spa in downtown Toronto, the shift of lands, the land deal, the Greenlands crisis, the land issue there, and the green belt issue rather, and just basically, I mean, the building of the tunnel. Like, there's so many things that have been questionable that they are really drawing attention to. So they're really banging that drum on a spending issue. They say they are talking about underfunding of healthcare, the fact that so many hospitals are have long waiting lists, and that critical care is sort of has gone wanting 3 years into his mandate when he said that that was going to be a priority item. The underfunding of education, the fact that there are larger classrooms and that schools have also gone wanting, when again, we all know that the conservative government is sitting on a multi-billion dollar surplus. And of course, children's aid, child care services are also going wanting, the fact that there's tremendous need in those areas, that they're being underfunded, and they're having to sort of cut back on programs and services for children. We've seen that in London with the London Children's Aid cutting back mental health services for children in care, which is worse. So these are the issues that they are stressing. I think they've been very effective in it, but it's still early. But I think that as much as they're trying to take a granular position and look at the key issues that affect daily Ontarians' lives, Ford is really stressing the tariff and the trade issue. He's trying to present himself as a national style leader who can counter Trump on these issues. And he's really stressing that. And he seems to be gaining some traction. I mean, the polling is suggesting that he's doing very well. So
I
who
mean,
knows how.
he's even appeared, which is interesting to me, considering the premier of a province doesn't have much pull in this situation, according to the Americans. But he's even appeared on a lot of American networks talking about the tariff
Fox
situation.
News, including Fox News, where he sort of has taken on that higher profile. And because he's a conservative, and we know that ideologically that Doug Ford is much aligned with the MAGA movement in the US, with Fox News. I mean, I think he's more friendly with those guys. But he also knows that the tariff crisis could blow a hole in the Ontario economy. So he's certainly presenting himself in terms of opposing that, fighting for Ontario, fighting for jobs. Politically, it's a savvy move, and he's a populist. That's his strength. He is a guy who presents himself as an ordinary Ontario average person in office. I don't know if that's true or not, because he has a business background that's very successful, quite affluent, but it's working for him, and he's playing that role, and he's doing it well.
Let's talk about some of the other parties. NDP leader Merritt Stiles was here in London just earlier this week, a couple days ago, slamming Doug Ford for back of the napkin plans. What does she mean by that? What does that mean?
I love that quote. I love that quote, that comment. That was a good one. Basically, that he was going to, when the tariff crisis broke with the U.S., he started doing the tours of American media. He went to Washington. Now, the premiers went as well, but he went on his own. Additionally, he took solo plans. So there was no real concerted. Her position was, it would be best as a country and as a province if we worked together to present a united front to the Americans and to Washington. And the NDP and the Liberals were willing to work with the Conservatives on the united front, all parties. He shunned Bonnie Crombie and Merritt Stiles. He went on his own. He's doing the solo show. That's what she means by back of the napkin. Like, he's sort of winging it and saying, I can own, when I think it's the position of the opposition that we work better if we are working together. The united front is needed on this. Ford has not done that.
Right, working together. She also she talked about on her campaign, she was doing some campaigning with Terence Kernaghan here in London to increase funding to healthcare, making sure every Ontarian has access to a family doctor. Is healthcare one of her main platform legs, I guess?
It's a main platform. It's something that she's really stressing at every stop. She's talking about a $4 billion NDP plan to really revamp healthcare in Ontario. She's promising a doctor for every Ontario, which is, I mean, I don't know how she can do that. That's kind of wild. But okay, sure, it's a campaign and she's a politician. But she's planning significant more investment, if elected, into healthcare, which is certainly needed. So, but conservatives themselves have pledged, I think, more than $1 billion in additional funding. They're dropping $1 billion here and there. He comes to London to give a for an event and pledges $1 billion for a new police college in Aylmer. He pledged $1 billion for a job retreat to $1 billion in additional funding for a job training fund. I mean, that was within 2 days. Now he's talking about more than $1 billion increase in healthcare spending. So he's making promises too, but certainly it's not as much. It's not as significant. The investment in healthcare that he's talking about is not as significant, not as much money as what the Liberals and the NDP are saying.
Okay. Let's turn to the liberals now. No Bonnie Crombie in London yet. Liberal leader Bonnie Crombie hasn't come to London yet. Are we
No.
expecting her to make an appearance here?
The Liberals are a bit of a mystery because they don't even have candidates in every riding. So I really, and they've been kind of, they have not been as high profile in the campaign. I don't think they have the funding or the candidates to have a higher profile. I don't know if Bonnie Crombie is going to be here. I assume over the course until February 27th that she will make a stop here. It would certainly be important for her to do so. But no, I don't know. And I think her policies are very much in line with the position of the Liberals, very much in line with what we're seeing from the NDP too, in terms of criticizing Ford for scandals that we mentioned earlier in Toronto and the RCMP investigation, but also pledging more money for healthcare. The Liberals are very strong on the housing issue, and the NDP are talking about that too, about putting significantly more money into affordable housing and to rent geared to income housing, which is different from affordable. It's more for people in need. They have fairly aggressive housing strategies, which are setting them apart somewhat. So, yeah, I mean, that's worth watching from the Liberal camp for sure.
So, as you said, we don't have Liberal candidates in two of the three London ridings, London West and London Fanshawe. We don't have a Liberal candidate at all. There's candidates
Now.
for every other party. But right now, all three London ridings are NDP held. So, how are the NDP feeling about this election, this campaign? A couple of those ridings are fairly long-standing NDP
Yeah,
strongholds.
London
So,
is an NDP stronghold. London's an NDP stronghold and has
yeah.
been for quite some time. And it's going to be interesting to see if they can hang on to it. There's, in London North Centre, Terence Kernaghan, he served 2 terms as MPP, but he has Jerry Pribble, who is a city councillor, who's taking a leave from a city council position, and a well-known London businessman who runs the Merry and Bad restaurant downtown London. Very liked guy, well-liked in the city, well-known guy. So he's running a fairly high-profile campaign against Terence, and so that's a bit of a dogfight. But, I mean, I checked there's an aggregate website called 388canada.com, which takes polling, aggregates it, posts it. I don't know if it's accurate. I really don't. But I check it once in a while just because. And they're suggesting that every riding in London is a dogfight. It's very close at all of them between the Conservatives and the NDP. Who knows, if that polling is accurate? And polling has been very sort of volatile and fickle. I can't really rely on it. But it remains to be seen if London is going to maintain the NDP stronghold that it is. I mean, I can't help but think that it will, just based on history. But there's no denying, whether you love him or hate him, the popularity of Doug Ford. Like the Léger Post media popularity at a 46, 47% across Ontario. And I think, the Toronto area was the only area where he sort of was not polling well because of the issues I think that we talked about. The RCMP investigation and the land scandal due all Toronto-based. So he's had a heavy hand in Toronto politics as a premier, and I don't think that has fared well for him there. But the regions love him. There's no doubt about that.
Let's talk about tariffs and how that's going to impact Ontario, maybe southwestern Ontario. We've talked a lot about that here in this area. But what are you hearing?
If tariffs are implemented, the 25% across the board, not just in aluminum and steel, we have a manufacturing heavy base there. We have GDP of $7.8 billion out of London area. 6.8 of that is in manufacturing, auto dominated. So if we have tariffs on that, we could see a significant job loss, a massive hit in the job situation here in London. And it's really worrisome. So I think that there are a lot of people concerned about that.
But this is really more of a federal fight, right?
Well, you're right. The politics of it are federal, but the biggest that there are two or three areas that are going to, if Trump implements 25% tariffs across the board now on more than just steel and aluminum. And there seems to be sentiment out of Washington today, this morning, that he will. So if he puts 25% tariff on all goods sold from Canada to the United States, the area that will most heavily be hit is manufacturing, because we manufacture and ship a lot of parts and goods into the US. And Ontario, and most of the largest sector hits automotive. Southern Ontario is an automotive hot belt. We have hotbed. We have, Windsor, London. We have CAMI. We have a Volkswagen plant under construction. Honda has pledged $15 billion in EV investment here in Ontario. We have two Toyota plants. Ford and Stellantis, formerly Chrysler, also have plants. GM has a candy plant. So, I mean, we have tens of thousands of workers who could lose their jobs in Ontario if there are 25% tariffs implemented. We have 6.8. We have a in London. We have a $7.8 billion in GDP. 6.8 of that, all of it except 1 billion, is focused on manufacturing. A lot of that will be devastated by cuts. And automotive leaders in the U.S. have stood up too, like the CEO of Ford of US and Linamar, major auto parts manufacturer in the U.S., have come out and said they will blow the whole of the auto industry in the U.S. They'll have shutdowns of plants. You have massive layoffs in the U.S. as well. So it remains to be seen, even when corporate America is turning against Trump and the MAGA movement on the tariff issue, why they're pursuing this. It appears to be madness, but it's something that we should watch closely and be concerned about how it plays out for not just London and region, but all of Ontario.
You and I had talked before about the Volkswagen plant and the tariffs and the potential that the plant may not even build here if the tariffs do come into effect. Is that still a
Well,
threat?
it's such an interesting issue, and no one really knows. Volkswagen says no. Volkswagen says they're committed, and they've continued. They've been very strong in saying they're continuing hiring, which they are. I check in with them regularly. They're not constructing now because it's February, but up to the snow flying, they were doing a prep on site. They're planning a concrete pour in the spring to start pouring the concrete beds for the plant. Again, they're building their team in St. Thomas. They are adding suppliers. They've announced a few suppliers, and more people are lining up. So they are full steam ahead. So analysts and experts have said the Volkswagen plant could be in jeopardy because it's so early in the phase. It's early to It's easier to pull the plug. And this Volkswagen plant in St. Thomas is going to supply plants in South Carolina and Tennessee. And we know that there was an area in the U.S. that was a second, close second to St. Thomas in terms of the campus. I think it was Tulsa, Oklahoma, from memory. So that has to be weighing on minds. I mean, Volkswagen, to its credit, has said no, that they are. Analysts have said that it is a situation that bears watching.
Do you think that Canada has promised counter tariffs to the US? Will that save any jobs? Will that recoup any of the costs that we're losing if the tariffs do come into effect against Canada?
I think we have to. I think we don't have a choice. Like, we can't just take it. So in 2018, when this last happened after Trump was first elected, he did exactly the same thing. He implemented tariffs on Trump on aluminum and steel. We implemented counter tariffs. That trade war lasted about a year before Trump relented and lifted the restrictions. So I think the same thing has to happen. We have to implement counter tariffs. We have to show that we're not going to sort of just take that. We have to place some on the American economy, which we can do. I mean, Canada is not impotent in this fight. We are significant trading. We are the top trading partner for the United States. And yes, we are one-tenth their size, but all the governors in those northern states that trade with Canada are all lobbying MAGA to back off on this. So, I mean, yeah, we have to do it. I don't think it's going to necessarily save jobs here. I think it's going to inflict pain there, and that might have them relent. What could save jobs here is if we do a better job trading between ourselves. There's that whole issue of interprovincial trade barriers which have come up, and people are saying, geez, we should do a better job of trading between our provinces. And I mean, I've done some work on this recently, which hasn't been published yet, but there's some discussion that nationally dropping interprovincial trade barriers on things like agricultural products, trucking rules and regulations could add $200 billion in sales to the economy of Canada. I think locally in London, southwest of Ontario, it could improve our GDP. That's the value of goods made here by $1.4 billion if we are able to sort of ship across the country without restriction, without additional rules and regulations. So there is a significant impact on us trading outside our region. And I think they've always known this, but there has never been really a need to pay attention to it because we've always had trading with the U.S. But now that is sort of in question, more national and provincial leaders are saying we have to look at trading better. Minister Anand, the Liberal minister in charge of this, this file has said she's looking at it. I think they're starting a committee. She's meeting with Premier. So I think in the next year, we'll see various restrictions limited. I've read that there are more than 600 rules and regulations in place that are different between provinces, which is shocking. So there's a lot of work to do, but I think they're committed to doing it. And so it'll be interesting to see
It's
how
forcing
that
us
plays
to
out.
think outside the box.
We have to do it. And I think it's going to happen. I don't know about how much of impact it's going to have. We'll have to wait and see how far wide reaching it is, but I think that is going to occur, yeah.
All right. Well, thank you, Norm. We've covered so much
All right.
today. Appreciate
My
having you on,
pleasure.
all of your expertise, and we'll follow your stories because I know you'll have a lot more on this at lfpress.com. Thank you.
Thank you, Rachel. Appreciate your help. Bye-bye.